the Alex Trebek little tribute.
What Alex Trebek tribute?
I had said, like, if you just write
I had homework. Go ahead, kick it off.
Okay, well, here, then we'll just do it. Oh, we're going? All right. all right. In the spirit of Alex Trebek, and to pay homage to not an American hero, but definitely an American treasure, you know?
Oh, definitely.
I wrote two quick little Jeopardy-style questions where I'll provide you the answer, and you provide me the appropriate question.
Right.
Down?
Yes.
All right. So this one is, if we used Oregon as any type of measurement, America lost this war.
What is the war on drugs?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right?
I fucking love Jeopardy.
Yeah, cool. So, but that's a good one, right? Because, like, I mean, we've been fighting this war on drugs for 30 years, and then everybody's just like, drugs won, dude.
Drugs won.
Drugs won. And the other one would be, what is the I'm a terrible host. You're a great game player, but this would be the appropriate pronunciation of these letters as follows. UP space DOG.
The correct pronunciation?
Yes.
Oh, this is your tried and true favorite. What yes. is up dog?
Not shit, homie, just podcasting. What are you doing?
Right on.
We're missing Alex. Social nuisance podcast.
Oh shit. Okay, bitches, you guys are going to be mine.
Podcast. How you guys doing?
Welcome to Pound Town. Yeah, awesome.
Welcome to the Social Nuisance Podcast, your weekly discussion of all things current, requiring further insight, opinions, questions, and otherwise kick-in-your-face perspectives towards the betterment of humanity. Subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to help Pound Town grow. Get in on the conversations by liking our Facebook page and following us on Instagram at Social Nuisance Podcast. And if you really support all that we do, become a short sponsor and we'll advertise or shout out whatever you want just by dropping a dollar in our Venmo at Social Nuisance, which is exactly what Short did of Short Sponsors. Again, yeah.
We might have to do a backup bonus episode once a week, just called the Short Episode.
Probably. With his Short Sponsor, he wanted us to mention the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and that is 1-800-273-8255. A fantastic resource, available 24 hours, multiple languages. If you ever feel just down and out and just have some crazy thoughts, some thoughts that you wanted to really just address and talk with, we can help prevent suicide. The Lifeline provides 24/7 free and confidential support for people in distress, prevention, and crisis resources for you or your loved ones. Once again, National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. Shout out Short for your Short sponsorship.
There we go. Thanks a lot, SA.
For sure. My name is Imagine, and joining me as always, a man who single-handedly put Southern California back into the purple tier, Motion.
Not true. Of all the things you've said, first untrue one probably. No, did anyone know there was a purple tier? I thought red was the end.
No. We've since the beginning, LA County's been born in purple.
Born in purple?
We're just going to stay in purple until we get the all clear. And that's why, wait, it's over?
You know, we got to knock it off with these color codes. Like, remember when George Bush was president, there was the terrorism scale? And it was like, we're in orange. And I'm like, what do I do? Put on a sweater? I don't know what the fuck that means. Like, I don't...
Well, for the tiers for coronavirus, it's more based towards businesses and how things operate, and in a commerce setting. So, for example, the red tier, we were Orange County was in red tier. Riverside County was in red tier for a while. Ventura County, I think that I've got to orange, as a matter of fact. The best one to be in is in yellow. We're all shooting for yellow. But now that we're back in purple, all indoor dining has been removed. So previously restaurants could operate at 25% capacity. Some movie theaters could operate at 25% capacity. Mm-hmm. Now the gyms are closed. Restaurants are closed. Everyone has to go back outside.
You know, I kind of been paying attention a little bit. Weird, I know. Don't expect that from me.
Wow.
But I still feel that the spread is happening at, like, family events. Like, I don't think a lot of people are going to work and contracting it. I think that companies have, like, acclimated well to the rules and the science, you know, yeah, so to speak, as far as the rules go. But I think a lot of it is, like, people come together, you know, at family groups, family meetings, and put their guard down, and there's somebody there who doesn't quite have the symptoms, and, you know, is spreading it like that. But it does. It's funny with your intro. Like, I have traveled a lot and done a lot and taken absolute advantage of the, you know, values that the coronavirus has put forth for us.
Oh, yeah.
And I am at a place where I believe there's a pretty fucking safe way to do most everything, you know?
Agreed.
And it's kind of weird to watch the way our community is unfolding. For instance, Disney is further expanding Downtown Disney into Disney, California, yep, because they can't open a theme park, but they can open a shopping center modeled after a theme park. You know what I mean? It's like, what are we doing here, guys? What malarkey are we selling ourselves?
Yeah, I think with the retail spaces, I mean, especially like Disneyland and the theme parks, they're looking for anything that they could possibly take advantage of to open up their business. So I think with Disneyland, you know, they can't open the theme park, but if you say you can open an outdoor mall, then Disneyland will say, oh, okay, well, we can operate as an outdoor mall. That's what our shopping venues are. We'll just do that. So yeah. I think they're grasping at straws to get their business moving, which is perfectly fine and dandy. But as, to your point, you're exactly right. A majority of spread is coming from family events, small events. People are just gathering at the house, you know, just trying to get out for the weekend and the Halloween parties and Thanksgiving coming up and trying to get out for the summer. The small things, all everything that you think, like, yo, it's safe to go out. It's safe to do this. This person, I know where they've been. You really don't know. You really just have no idea where everyone's been. And the incubation period of the coronavirus, you just don't know. And then, like you said, you take every precaution necessary. And sometimes that works. Sometimes it's not enough, especially if you had an event where no one's taking any precautions. It's just difficult to say. But what does California do when you can't regulate, you know, small backyard parties?
Yeah. Well, you know, we live in a country where that wasn't meant for regulation.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, that's quite frankly, like, it does boil down to you got to be responsible for yourself. And if you're going to be out putting yourself in risk, you're going to, you know, absorb that risk and put forth whatever detriments or whatever harm comes your way and the way of the people around you. My family and I, we have this huge thing every holiday season where we open our doors to everybody. Anybody right. who doesn't have family, anybody, you know, we just went over the suicide hotline. Anybody who doesn't have friends, anybody who's not going to have a warm meal, like, it's always absolutely open. You guys come down, no questions asked. We have dinner for you. I overcook every year anyways. We do that for Thanksgiving. We do that for Christmas Eve. We do that for Christmas Day. Last year, Desi started the tradition that we're going to continue. Yeah, we're going to do that again this year as well. So if there's anybody who wants to participate in the hot cocoa thing, we are not going to be, for that particular thing, we're not going to be taking on help. But what I will do is drop off supplies to you, and you can help pass out hot cocoa to people in need. Now, the Thanksgiving meal that we always share, we are still opening our doors. But unlike other years where it's just show up, no questions asked, we do ask that you kind of reserve a spot, and we're going to make accommodations for anybody who comes, because everything will be outside. Everything will be socially distanced, And you can't just pop up for that. We need to know, you know, that you are coming, and we'll have a plate ready for you. Or if you're insecure about being out in public and having dinner with friends, we will have a plate for you to take home. You know, easily you can pull up, and I will make sure you get a fresh home cooked meal for the holidays and for however many people you may have in your house. Now, I'm not gonna throw your Thanksgiving party for you. I'm not gonna cook for 20 people.
That's beautiful, man. That
really is. We have plenty of food, and we've been talking about how to handle this, because one is we want to handle it safely. You know, my in-laws live on the same property as me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. The more I get, my fucking father-in-law is a tough son of a bitch, dude. The more I think like he would be a victim of it, I start to think like, man, this motherfucker probably already had it. But I'm not willing to risk anybody for your feel good. But I will do what I can do to make sure that you feel good through the holidays, you know.
And that's beautiful. And I think, you know, if people are in a position where, you know, you want to give back and you want to do something, I totally get that. You know, I've come across some people that have told me, you know, they don't want to cancel the holiday gatherings, even though I do. I want a total lockdown. I want a total freeze. I want all that.
Yeah.
But recently someone shared a perspective with me where they're saying, you know, we're moving along with Thanksgiving this year because we don't know if there might be someone in attendance that it might be their last.
Well, you wouldn't want to be the responsibility of that either, though, right?
Yeah. Well, not their last because of coronavirus, but their last because of just extenuating circumstances or just old age or what have you.
Yeah.
But they still want to provide a opportunity for Thanksgiving. And, you know, I can't argue with that. You know, that's a totally valid perspective. And I want to be conscientious of that. And if that's the case, then all I ask of people is to be conscientious of how you execute. You know, I have a family event coming up soon, and there's no if, ways, and about it. We're going to be attending the event just because we have to. We're stuck. It's out of our place.
Yeah.
And we're going to be wearing masks, and we're going to encourage everyone else to be wearing masks and just kind of be that voice of reason. And, you know, you do the best you can with what you got, ultimately.
Yeah. If you don't feel well, skip it. Don't put it on other people to notice you don't feel well. And then don't put it on them to be like the type of person that has to say, hey, dude, you're obviously ill. You can't be here.
Yeah.
You know, that's high level douchery on your part.
Absolutely agree. But if we're talking about douchery, high level douchery, you know, we got to be talking about, you know, the term Space Karen. Have you heard of Space Karen?
No, I haven't, but I love this. This is astronomical douchery. What's going on here with Space Karen?
Space Karen on Friday. This past Friday, Elon Musk said that he took 4 COVID tests. Well, actually 6. Took 6 different COVID tests. All at the same time, same person took the test, same
whatever. Same nurse, same machine.
Yes. He tweeted that out saying that he did the tests. And he took 4 nose swab tests, otherwise known as rapid antigen tests. And he got a 50% split on positivity. 2 tests said that he was positive for coronavirus. 2 tests said he was negative for coronavirus. And the 2 other tests that he had taken were the ones that got to go to the lab and so on and so forth. So he tweeted out like, hey, I took these tests and they said I'm positive and negative. So something's kind of fishy here.
Yeah.
And naturally that set Twitter ablaze.
But of course.
Naturally as well, there had to be some science in the room. And Dr. Emma Bell, who according to her Twitter bio is a bioinformatics postdoctorate at the De Carvalho Lab in Toronto.
She made all that up, dude. None of that's words.
Maybe. And she tweeted back to Elon Musk saying, rapid antigen tests trade sensitivity for speed. They return a result in less than 30 minutes, but only can detect COVID-19 when you're absolutely riddled with it. What's bogus is that Space Karen didn't read up on the test before complaining to his millions of followers. And naturally, Space Karen began trending.
Oh, so she hashtagged Space Karen calling Elon that.
Yes, Elon Musk, according to her, was Space Karen.
Let me tell you something about this fucking conservative, obviously Republican bitch, right? Because she didn't ask him his pronouns.
First.
This inconsiderate snatch. No, well, okay, but how would that, her point, valid as it may be, I don't know, I'm not questioning that. How would that explain the 50-50 split?
So I exactly correct. So I too wanted to understand a little bit better. So she mentioned that the rapid antigen tests trade sensitivity for speed.
Yes.
So the rapid. Oh my God.
Rapid antigen. We'll call it the rat.
I'm gonna call it the rat. Yeah. Rapid antigen test. The rat. So the rat is a nose swab.
Yes.
And the other test that you normally see, like on the news and shit, where they stick the fucking nose swab all the way back into your brain.
And they tickle your brain. Yeah.
Yeah. They actually get a throat swab.
So, does it go back down?
Yeah.
I think the lady who did mine fucked up then, because it tickled the back of my eye.
Oh, then she got way in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the four nose swabs with split results are meant to catch early signs of COVID. So the rapid antigen tests work best when someone is tested in the early stages of the virus when they have a high viral load. Okay. So normally these tests are useful for screening in congregate settings, such as nursing homes, shared housing facilities, stuff where you have to get a lot of people tested as soon as possible.
Yes.
That's what that's for. But if you really want to get, you know, a time-consuming, thorough test.
Correct.
It would be the throat swab. So when you have the rat test, according to a study that I read, has an 84% positivity rate as far as getting it right.
Oh, okay. 84% accuracy rate.
Accuracy. There you go. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, cool. Because when you say positivity, it sounds like it's 84% well, positive results. I still don't know if that's good or bad, because positive results sound like good news to me.
Yeah, like positively got it correct. But yes, accuracy would be a better term. 84% accuracy rate. But when you only had a sample size of four tests and getting 50%, that's not completely uncommon for that type of test.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple things at play here, like something where I get that it's 84% accurate over the span, like over its entire use, but any test where it's 50% like accuracy, whether, and we still don't know whether it was right or wrong. Well, I mean, I guess it really hedged its bets. It knew Elon was going to tweet. So it was like, I'm right either way now, motherfucker. Right? Like if the test could think. But we can't be using tests on something like of this scale where like it's a 50-50 fucking shot. Like that shouldn't be common, you know? And
right.
The other thing is, didn't Elon learn his fucking lesson about tweeting? Like didn't his stock tank after he tweeted some shit after Joe Rogan or smoked a joint or something? I guess it was smoking the joint. I guess it wasn't tweeting, but
oh yeah, he got investigated. He said that if his stock hit 420 a share, He was going to take it private.
Yeah.
He was going to take his company back.
And then he also got in trouble for tweeting about the guys trying to rescue the kids in Thailand, right? Or the cave workers?
Yeah, he called one of them a pedophile and got taken to court for defamation.
Yeah. You know, Elon, maybe you start, like, really need to... Maybe the COVID test is actually, like, an alcohol test. And it was, like, the two positive results, and then he started drinking. And then two negative results.
Yeah, either way, you should probably stop tweeting so carelessly. At least know what the hell you're talking about. I mean, know the damn test and what it's for. And as I said, you know, it's meant for like a high congregate setting.
Yeah, not a one-off.
Facility. Yeah, if you want to do a one-off test, I'm pretty sure Elon Musk has access to, you know, a lab somewhere that can fucking process the results a little bit faster.
You think he has his own Jarvis?
But shit, man. Oh, no doubt he has his own Jarvis. I mean, if he doesn't have his own Jarvis, what the fuck's he doing?
I had a quick question that's kind of on par with what we're doing here. As far as results and disease and things like that, have you heard the new AIDS commercial on the radio? And I'm not making this up.
No, I haven't.
It says, and I quote, "For people with HIV, keep being you." End quote. And what it is, it's about a daily treatment that allows you to like essentially live your life. But there's certain cultural markers, I'll call them, in which maybe you should like be a little introspective. Maybe you should take a look at your behaviors. Maybe you should question some of your decisions. And I think getting AIDS is one of them, right?
I
get that there's the one-off AIDS getter. But as a whole, again, 84%, you know, like if you get AIDS, you should probably evaluate a little bit about what you're doing in life. Even if it's minimal as unprotected sex.
Are you implying that if you got AIDS, you made bad choices?
Somewhere. Now, I'm not entirely implying that all your choices are bad. And of course, you're going to have like the Bradley Knoll. You know, the Secret Sublime, supposedly the one time he did drugs, he overdosed.
You're right. Yeah, I've heard.
That's probably because you're not good at doing drugs, you know, because it was your first time doing them. But like, I don't think you can blanket say, hey, if you got AIDS, keep being you. That's a little reckless, right? A little reckless. Come on, man.
I think I know where you're going with that.
It just
that.
Sounds bad.
I haven't fully formed a perspective or reasoning, but I'm just going to say I disagree.
I feel like that's a criminal lawyer, right? Because they're selling the medicine, first of all. So, like, they want more people to have AIDS. That'd be like a criminal defense attorney being like, you caught a felony. Keep doing that. You're all right. Like, no, bro. You probably fucked up somewhere, you know? Like, you're not supposed to keep being you if you leads you to be in prison or have things like AIDS.
Yeah. So somewhere in there, I'm again haven't fully formed the reasoning other than that no.
And it was like one of those radio commercials, like it's like totally jolly. Hey, if you got HIV, keep being you. Like we got you. Pharma. One pill a day, pharma, but go on ahead with your bad self. No, first of all, you got to stop having unprotected sex. You're going to hurt other people, stupid. Right? Like,
yes, unprotected sex. I mean, that's one thing.
And if that's how you contracted it, immediately stop being you. You're going to affect so many more people. Well, I just had it. I hope whoever wrote that commercial hears this.
I hope so too. I think it'll be a very lively conversation about life decisions. But since we're on the topic of life decisions, what about removing children from your inheritance?
Absolute. My inheritance? Or like inheritance? Well, I'm older now. So yeah, get rid of them.
Elderly Spaniards have decided to disinherit their children after being abandoned to lonely lockdowns.
Okay. Well, that's high level contradictions, right?
So according to some Spanish support networks for the elderly, many older people, and this is in Spain, many older people have been so heartbroken by the lack of contact from relatives during the pandemic that they are seeking advice on how to cut them out of their will. So one of the program directors for these support networks has said that they've been receiving 220 calls a month asking for advice on how to disinherit a child or children, which is 5 times more than pre-pandemic levels. Seems justifiable.
I don't know. Like, I'm trying to... First of all, receiving that many calls doesn't tell me that that's that many different people. It could be the same old fucking bitch calling every day. But, aren't they supposed to be not... I get not contacted as in, like, not phone. But, like, we're supposed to not be around our seniors.
Yeah, but I think it could just be the... not necessarily lack of physical contact, but just lack of contact overall. To help clarify, some judges are interpreting the law more kindly, and their rulings now where the psychological suffering caused by complete lack of contact is being equated to mistreatment. Well, so almost an extreme case of elder abuse if you're not staying in contact with your elders.
This is one of the aspects of what the gamble or the long-term effects of the quarantine is that people have talked about, that we'll find out about as generations go on, you know? We were kind of like extrapolating in a silly way, a friend and I, about the effects and life's loss due to quarantine. And so this is a definite effect. There has been a rise in suicides. There's been a rise in child abuse. There's been a rise in domestic violence. Yep. You know, across the board, things that you would tie to people being solitude. How do you say being solitude? Like being, being by themselves. But there's also going to be in the next 10 years results of missed cancer screenings, increased smoking, increased alcohol, bad eating, also probably better eating, probably working out at home. You know, there's going to be plus and negatives, but we're going to see things. The one that we really spent time talking about was cancer screenings. different things that, you know, palpitations of the heart that turn out like, whoa, you had a minor heart attack sometime in the past month. Different signifiers that we pick up on in the medical, not me in the medical, but that the medical community picks up on that right. You know, they combat over time. But yeah, depression, loneliness, that is going to be something that pans out. And those societies that we always kind of, or initially with the quarantine, we modeled like the way to handle, like Italy and Spain, their elders are so much more used to being in home. Their culture is that you take in your elders and then, you know, make life easy for them as it comes to an end. So I can imagine that there's a real existential crisis for elders out there being left alone when for hundreds of years they've done it so differently. Whereas here, right. We kind of send our, in America, we send them out to pasture, you know what I mean? Send grandma to the glue factory.
Leave the check, send you out.
Exactly. But yeah, that's a real thing, you know, right?
Do you think you're going to stay in, I don't know if you have an inheritance or coming, or your dad has a will, or, you know, whatever. Do you think you would continue to be within the inheritance, or would you be cut out?
Dude, if I've made it this far, I don't know how I could fuck it up now. yeah, it wouldn't be through COVID. I would say, you know, Paz fucked up one time and told me that like the most way this one might get us researched by the FBI. Let me change keywords and then you guys use your imagination. What I'll change is a mode of transportation, and then you guys will be able to figure out what he was telling me. Okay. So he told me,
cool.
There you go. He was telling me if he died by an American Airlines spaceship crashing, I would get the most money. Okay? And the way I took it was like, challenge accepted. What do you mean, dude? Like, you think I couldn't take a spaceship out the sky, bro? You know, like, don't give me the formula to success, dude. Like, let me figure it out. But, yeah, I don't know on my mom's end. I still don't really know much about that. I just got bad genes from her. But, as far as Pops, he says I'm in it. I don't know. Who knows? Like, that's some shit I would tell my kids while I was alive, too. Because when I die, fuck them. Who cares what they find out, you know? Like,
yeah, I think that's what – if I had no money, I would just make it look like somewhere a paper trail that had, like, millions of dollars in inheritance.
And then just
make my kids fight it out. And then when I die, they all find out that it was, like, in Monopoly money.
Keep bringing it up, right? Like, the whole end of your life, like, you're going to be out the will.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Dad, no. Yeah. You know, and like, just, I don't know, dude, I want to spend it all before I clock out. Like, I want to leave my kids something, but when I say something, I mean like an old truck, you know, like I want to go, dude. Like, I want my casket to be, and I'm just making this up right now, I want my casket to be like Stephen Hawking's life car, like the thing he had during life. I want my casket to be like that sensitive. And just however the earth rolls me, I want it to go four-wheel fucking 100 miles an hour that way, dude. And then if, like, I hit a bump and my head moves this way, I want to go, it's going to turn right, you know? Like,
you'd be like Bugs Bunny burrowing
underground. Yeah, dude, and I want stupid flames painted on it. Like, I don't know, man. I just want to take someone with me, you know what I mean, dude? Like, fuck, did I just change the subject? My bad.
I don't know, but if you're going to be, you know, putting people into a will or taking people off a will – at what point do you take them off the Christmas list?
Oh, dude. Yeah. We're having this conversation right now in our family. Like, we're so thank God my kids don't listen to this. So annoyed by them, dude. We were talking about putting the Christmas tree upside down so that only like two or three gifts fit at the bottom of it. But I would say around the time they reach 14.
Okay. Well, let me provide you an article that I came across to give some perspective. It was one of those like Dear Abby kind of things, you know, help me out with the question of life. And this person has a fiance. I presume she's the woman writing this. My fiance and I have three kids each. So very much a Brady Bunch situation going on. And she has a stepson who is 16. And this stepson is apparently very difficult to deal with. And she said that last Christmas, he forgot his Christmas gift that she got him, and she thinks it was deliberate. And he's always been difficult and very antisocial and just a lot of attitude. So she's debating not getting him anything this year. So she spent the last 2 years trying very hard to be kind to him and always greet him and include him regardless of his attitude. But recently she's just like, I don't fucking care about this guy. So now I don't think I want to get him anything for Christmas.
Yeah.
Do you think that's okay?
Well, first of all, I would like to ask if she ever thought of cash, right? Because everybody loves cash. Like, maybe you're a bad gift giver, stupid. But here's the thing. We need to decide in this generation whether or not Christmas presents are an actual reward for good behavior, or if they're Christmas presents because it's Christmas. Because it sounds like this kid has no connection to consequence with Christmas. You see what I'm saying? Like, he's kind of expecting a gift, and she might be a bad gift giver, or she might be a bad gift giver subconsciously because she doesn't want to reward the bad behavior. And so she might, like, you know, and also, like, kids are fucking kids, dude. If he's a year older and you're still holding on to last year, like, there's so much growth that happens in those years. There's just so much going on here at play. Like, is it worth the argument? Is it going to piss off your husband? Is it going to look bad that you give five other kids, three of them being yours, something like, and then are those kids older or are they younger? Because if they're older and you're taking out a younger one, you're going to have a fucking hot tamale to play with. It's just, there's so much there. I would say, give them, you know, decide, first of all, if it is behavior, if there is a reward risk, reward factor. If there is, make sure you enforce that equally. If you have any other scumbag kids, which people with six kids, they got to have, that's 84%. 84% again. They got to have an 84% scumbag rate. Like, come on, dude. Stop making Uber drivers, you guys. This shit's gonna, we're going to have auto driving pretty soon. These people, you know what? Fuck her. No Christmas gifts for her and her shitty husband for putting six extra people on this planet that are just going to get in the way of our lives later on, dude.
All valid perspectives. And I, as soon as I read the article, I just had one response.
What was that?
He's fucking 16.
Yeah.
Show me one teenage boy, 16 years old, that wasn't being a little shit.
Right.
Okay, that was my first point. Number two, it's fucking Christmas. Like you said, is it reward factor for being good all year? You get a good Christmas gift, or is it just fucking Christmas? To me, it's just fucking Christmas. You always get something for Christmas. If you're within the range of being provided a gift, you get a gift. Unless it's like predetermined prior that we're not doing gifts or we have a limit or we decided only a certain amount of people, whatever. Predetermined. But if you're doing it out of spite, it's Christmas.
Get over yourself. Holding on to this for a year, right? Like this feeling,
yeah,
huh?
And well, yeah, I guess because she got slighted for whatever reason. But here's my main thing. Besides the fact that he's only 16, besides the fact that it's only Christmas, my main thing is you're the fucking adult here.
Right.
You're the adult and you're feuding with a 16-year-old?
Dude.
Come on, what? Man. It's like you got bigger problems if you're the one who's like, oh, fuck that 16-year-old kid. I need to get back at him. Like, what kind of life are you living where you feel like you need to do that?
Yeah, dude, fuck Space Karen. let's have it fucking for Christmas Karen, dude.
Christmas
this
Karen.
Christmas Karen have an ass bitch, dude. It's just like there's so much growth in a kid from 15 to 16. And if there wasn't, we might need to talk to his, I don't know, parents, right?
I agree.
What a fucking cunt.
Yeah, I disagreed on just cutting this kid out of Christmas because he's going through, you know, teenage angst.
While we're talking about gift giving, I have a quick question. We're playing like a real good verbal ping pong here, man. Let me bounce one back at you with a quick question about gift giving.
Oh, I love good volleyball sessions. I look great in volleyball shorts.
What
continue.
Has the Helpful Honda people done for BLM? Right? Ooh,
that's a good one. I think they're on the Blue Lives Matter part because they're all wearing blue.
Okay, well, fuck. I haven't got pulled over by a Honda Accord yet this year. I just thought I was listening to like they've really unleashed some commercials during the holidays. So we listen to Jack FM all day at the shop, and it's just like an hour of music and then 20 minutes of commercials. And so a lot of my material, guys, over the next couple months is going to be radio commercial material. Sorry about that. Just bear with me. But One of those is Helpful. Honda people have done a series, a new ad campaign, of course, doing the Helpful shit, but they've released 6 new episodes, I guess you can call it. And, like, they're ultimately, except for one, pretty petty. And I just looked at a homeboy. I was like, hey, dude, when's Helpful Honda people going to call BLM? I would love to hear that commercial. Well, didn't we have, I kind of talked about this with, like, a Chola. I would have loved to have them call Chola. Remember that one episode and her just be like, oh, this is lips. But, you know, however that goes. But now, like,
okay,
like how inconsequential their help is. One of them was, it was like a first responder or something. I don't know if it was a cop, a fire department, a hospital. I think it was a hospital. But they rebuilt the break room. But for some reason, the company, the corporation had to stop at a fridge. They weren't allowed to provide a fridge. So, like, the Helpful Honda people are like, we'd love to buy your $100 million company a fridge. And the girl's like, no way, really, a fridge? And I was just like, we have like so much more real shit on our plate this year, and they're fucking buying rich people fridges. Like, come on, dude, when's Helpful Honda people gonna call BLM? I'm excited for that one.
I think that's a great perspective, because, you know, when you're what do you call it again, virtue, yes, signaling. They're virtue signaling there. You know, we're helpful people. We want to just, you know, do the right thing. We're helpful Honda people. You should buy a Honda because, you know, when you come to buy a Honda, we're not trying to take advantage of you. We're trying to be helpful.
And then I started to stumble into these thoughts. You know how, in this past few years, and we've commentated it a lot on this show about the evolution of woke, how initially it was like a good thing, and then it became like a virtue signaling thing. Then not only that, but it became a thing that, like, if you didn't do, like, the black screen on Instagram, you're against us. And why didn't you post about BLM? And it's just like, maybe I don't have a comment right now. Not saying me particularly, but we watched all right. that happen, you know? And right, I was right. thinking about where woke is now and how, like, so BMW is doing a thing where they're doing, if you test drive a BMW, it buys a family a meal or something. That's not exactly woke, but everybody's on this front now, you know, to be charitable. And first of all, I thought that was hilarious. Like, you guys could make cars for Hitler, and no one wants to talk about that, right? But now you're going to serve turkey? Anyways, but how corporate America has gone woke, right? Like, Hollywood, if you are any type of not woke, you're not going to get the gig. Commercials have had a virtue signal, their wokeness. And it has just led me to believe, to be in a place where if... Like, there's two things there. They want to be woke because they want to be accepted, right? Like, that's the new world, masks and woke.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more anti-woke than corporate America being woke. Like, isn't that exactly that's what true. We didn't want? And it led me back to this place of Bernie, where it's like they want to accept a certain amount of leftism that they can deal with. Like, you want us to send our corporate officers to sensitivity training? Cool, no problem. You want us to hire a black guy? Cool, no problem. Like, that's this leftist that we have right now, right? That's this leftism.
Right.
But Bernie, a year ago, was like, there shouldn't be billionaires. And they're like, whoa! Can't be that woke, bro! Free tuition! Whoa! Who's going to pay for this tuition? We're going to take it from stock exchanges. Every time someone switches a stock, we're going to steal a penny. No, we're not doing that, bro. But a new black CFO, no problem. Come on in. You know, it's like it's this level of wokeism on the left and how far it's allowed to go. And then, like, what really comes of it? Like, what real change is there? I hope we got, you know, some black folks, some good new jobs higher up. You know, look at Kamala Harris. Definitely the woke movement had something to do with getting her where she's at. But
sure.
But is there gonna be any real change, or is it just gonna be on a facial level? You know, is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as someone who is an advocate for that type of progression, I certainly hope so. And I feel like the only way that we can do it is keeping people accountable. And I think that the woke movement, if you will, they made a certain amount of progress in bringing, you know, the woke movement to the mainstream. But now how do you ensure that you stay in control of it? You stay in control of the narrative. So like you said, you know, they'll accept it to a tolerable level, but as soon as you cross the line, they shut you down. How do we ensure that we maintain the narrative like, no, we're not backing down just because you're uncomfortable with it. And you know, they say we draw the line here. No, we're still going to keep pushing. I'm hoping for that level of progression, not only in government, but, you know, in social aspects.
Corporate America as well, social America.
Yeah, and like you said, if we capture a company displaying their level of wokeness by way of virtue signaling, we call them out for it. But hey, man, like you said, hey, Honda, helpful Honda, if you're really helpful, how about you help out the ACLU? What's up with that? You know what's going on?
But yeah, stuff and that, like that whole stream of consciousness did come from a helpful Honda commercial. That's what's fucked up.
I believe it all started with them trying to
be helpful, help right? Nah, fuck it, you're not helpful enough. Yeah, right. That is like if I was like in the left, well, in the left or the right in any way, shape, or form. But I would be an advocate of eating itself, right? Like the snake at its tail. Like they're trying to actually help people, and I'm like, nah, you're fucking helping, not fucking helping, right?
Yeah, I agree. And if you're ever going to help away, if you're going to help something, do it by way of throwing money.
Absolutely.
At it. That's the best way you can help us. So David Woodland, he's a dad, and he posted on Twitter that he and his wife came up with a scheme to pay their oldest son $1 for every book that he read.
All right.
And it seems to be working out considering that his son has read a whopping 120 books this year.
Jesus Christ.
And he said he's paid about $120, and it's the best investment that he's ever made. However, some people on the internet are like, this is not a good idea.
No way. There's people on the internet that disagree with him?
They disagree with throwing money at the kid to begin reading at a young age.
And those people are communists. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. What is their point? What's their stance?
So I was totally on board with it. I was like, hey, anything to get people reading? That's a great idea. But then I did more reading in the article and read all perspectives. And then I was like, you know what? They actually have some really good perspectives. They raised points about how being paid to do something they should be doing anyway will skew their understanding of what's expected of them as a member of society.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be being paid to fucking read. You should enjoy reading. And if you turn learning and reading into something that sort of resembles a job, then there might be a chance that they eventually – the kids are not going to care enough to continue doing it. They're just like, nah, I don't want to. It's not worth the money.
That's a stance mediocrity takes because the kid is not doing what he's supposed to be doing by reading. Nobody's supposed to have read 120 books as a kid in 1 year. That's not what he's supposed to be doing. Yeah, he's supposed to be reading, but he now has an incentive to excel at what he's supposed to be doing to be better than everybody around him at it. And it happens to be a fiscal motivation. He's not supposed to have read 120 books. Get the fuck out of here. Like, he could be mediocre, like the people criticizing him, but he's not. There's an incentive, there's a goal, and because of that, he's excelled extremely well at it and surpassed what he should be doing. And it costs the dad $100, a little more than $100. Like,
I agree. I
just was saying, like, that sometimes there's, like, well, just like with this show, with you and I, we have to be contrarians for the sake of, you know, the episode. And it's like, not that anybody's trying to be a contrarian. I'm sure the people that actually feel, you know, about the things they said. And I just want them to know that might be the stupidest things that someone has ever said in that spot. But that, you know, the internet's the internet, dude. You can't just have love on it. There's got to be hate, too. For some fucking weird reason, on every post, there has to be both things.
That's true. I think this is a great start. Like you said, anything to get people to start reading. I mean, $120, that's a great investment to get this kid reading.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The concern for me is at what point, if I was to say, look, I'm not going to provide you any money anymore, and then they stop reading. So was it about the money, or what did they do to facilitate an actual joy of reading or understanding the benefits of reading that they would continue to carry on with that type of activity without a financial incentive?
There's so many just basic tools that a child will get from reading, whether or not they know it. One, behaviors are habit forming. So you may decide, okay, that was our thing. We did it. It's expired. But you may have created a kid who loves to read. You know, that might be habit forming. Not only that, but the way the American language is set up, prefixes and suffixes, they have already acquired so much knowledge that they will use from this point on, whether or not you pay them. The second thing you could do is create the next, you know, the next incentive. Maybe it's not reading now. Maybe it's multiplication. Maybe it's division. Maybe it's exponents. Maybe it's history. Maybe it's, but there's nothing wrong with paying your child to learn. And I mean, how many of us got like $5 for an A or something growing up?
It harkened back to when I was little, when I would get good grades on my report card or, you know, decent enough grades.
Yeah.
my parents would take me to Toys R Us and I'd get a new video.
That's getting paid.
Yeah. I remember. And that's when I was like, okay, you know, I thought back to that. I was like, okay. Now, when I think back of it now, I'm like, okay, did it lead to me doing better in school because I wanted to, or because I wanted like the reward at the end of the tunnel? And I don't think it led me to want to do better in school. But then at the same time, I'm also thinking, well, I may have not done well in school, but I love learning. I love education. So maybe it did work.
Yeah, and that lesson may forever be unseen. But here's the point. You got tools from those episodes, from those moments in time where the reward was the game. You still absorb certain things. So you may not have been directly affected, but subconsciously, you're a better person today because you took those lessons with more open eyes and ears because of whatever that reward was. And can we spend 30 seconds to talk about how fucking great it was to buy a video game at Toys R Us when we were kids? Do you remember the sample stations that would be there, and they're covered in a little plastic casket, and you could play Eternal Champions or fucking Beast War, I don't know, whatever the fuck. And then you just had to take that little paper slip, remember? You had to get that paper slip with the barcode, go up to the front, they scan it, and then you had to go over to the guy in the cage. And the guy in the cage had all the video games. God damn, he was like an emperor, right? That was the coolest fucking dude in my life, the guy that lived in that cage. I swear to God, I think he lived there. I think he had all the stations, and he tested every game. He knew all the instruction manuals, and there was a twin mattress back there, and the guy just lived back there. They fed him other little kids that didn't get good grades and didn't get to get new games.
I think that's exactly how it went. I drove by a Toys R Us today. Of course, it was shuttered. But I drove by and I was like, fuck, dude, Toys R Us. Cause I mean, it's, the holidays are coming up. So I was thinking to myself like, fuck, dude, like Toys R Us was the fucking shit. And I remember filming a music video there before I got into music, and it was fucking amazing. Toys R Us was the shit. And I just had this feeling come over me of like, man, that fucking sucks. Like, where am I going to take my son to get that Toys R Us experience?
That juice, dude, that boost. My dad did the same thing, dude. Every once in a while he'd take us down and just buy us a video game. And it was like, fuck, like, I can't imagine how annoying it must have been for him. For like, oh no, this one. And me and my brother, we were half brothers, stepbrothers, and we had to agree. And there's no fucking way you're going to get me and him to agree, dude. I don't know how we did. I'm pretty sure what he did was just got my brother to act humble. And then like, when I went back to my mom's, I think he went and got my brother what my brother actually wanted. But yeah, you just run back and forth, up and down the aisle, like getting this paper, getting that paper. Wait, we got to try this game. We got to try that game. And not only does it not exist anymore in this time and place, but if it didn't go out last year like it did, it would have gone out during COVID, because there's no way you could have that place during a pandemic.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You touched everything.
Yeah.
We would ride the bikes up and down the aisle, the fucking bikes that they sold. And then we go, nah, we don't want it, and just drop it off somewhere over by the Beanie Babies, you know? Like.
Yeah, it was the greatest, man. I was legitimately disappointed that I couldn't think of a place I'm going to take my son to get the Toys R Us experience. I want him to be a Toys R Us kid.
I remember the riots over like Tickle Me Elmo, or
my mom was in that mix.
Oh, dude, I'm just glad she made that out alive, dude. I love your mom. She's a great lady. We got to hang out with her last New Year's Eve. I'm going to miss your family this year. This holidays, we always made sure we spent time. Sometime at some point during the holidays, you and I would give each other a hug.
Yeah, in some form or fashion.
Shout out to Imagine's cool, family. Man. Well, and your new, well, not new. Milo's a year already, but you know, your immediate family is aging as well. And do you guys have any cool holiday traditions that have been slightly altered for the three of y'all? I'm not talking in the bigger family aspect.
No, I mean, the only tradition that we really started was we buy an ornament. We buy a Christmas ornament for each year.
Oh, dude, what do you have an idea for the COVID year? Like, what do you, is it going to be COVID resemblance?
I don't know. I'm sure we got to get something. 2018 was the first year that we got one, because that was the year that we moved in. We got our house. So it's only, this will be our third year doing it. But yeah, so 2018, we got a red truck that resembled Daisy's red truck that she had. And then last year we got an Elmo ornament, because fucking the boy loves my Elmo. Yeah, man. So we got him that. But I don't know. We'll see what it looks like.
We had a break. We broke our first tradition. Since we started dating 6 years ago, we always did two major Halloween events. We did Knott's Scary Farm every year. And then we would switch back and forth between Universal Studios or Queen Mary. Cool. And we didn't get to do any of those. So we didn't even do the drive-through experiences, because we were shopping for cars at the time. We broke that tradition, and we will be happy to hop back on the cooking tradition of, we started for our anniversary. This is our third anniversary, but it was only our second year. We get a cabin every November for a few days, and we go up to the woods with the kids and cook for 3 days straight and be merry. And this year we happened to do it during election results. During election day, we left. So I was excited to not have to deal with the election. And then when we came back down the mountain, turns out y'all motherfucker didn't elect a president yet. So, so we're still dealing with that.
Yeah, true that. Since we're talking about, being rewarded for good grades, you have to actually, pay attention in class. And during the age of COVID, it can be a little bit more difficult for teachers to ensure that the kids are paying attention. So a teacher is being praised as a genius for testing to see if her students are paying attention during Zoom class. And what she's doing is the teacher is asking kids to meow within hidden test questions. Wow. So while in the test question, like number 9, it says, please meow for the teacher to, ensure that you read this question kind of shit. So some kids started meowing, and then other kids are like, why is somebody meowing?
What is that comedy troupe? Is it Broken Lizard? The Super Troopers
troupe? Oh, yeah.
You know how fast you're going, meow? I wonder if she must be a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, so some people are calling it genius. Other people are saying that it's degrading and unfair to those who are socially anxious.
Oh my God, those people, knock it off.
I am right there with you. It's like, look, social anxiety is a thing. I totally get that. But that's what speech class is for.
Not only that, but you're not social. I get that you're in a Zoom class, but you're in the privacy of your home. Fucking meow, estupido.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like an in-person classroom and the teacher still asked you to meow, or I mean, fuck, man, it's just good fun.
Yeah, dude.
For fuck's sake, it's just for good fun. But the social anxiety excuse, that's where it pushed me over the edge. I was like, come on.
Dude, find a better argument. So, say you're allergic to meows, not cats, but meows. That would be like,
specifically.
I'm going to need to see a doctor's note. But till then, don't meow.
The teacher is a cat fan, so there's no real reason or rhyme or reason for meowing, other than the fact that she likes cats, and the classroom knows that she likes cats. So that's why she incorporated meowing. It's nothing to do with, making a kid look stupid or anything like that. So
yeah,
I just kind of like, come on, man.
Definitely don't need help with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, dude, that's fucking, God, those people gotta knock it off, man.
Yeah.
They really do.
Pretty much. That's all the stories I got for this week. So you want to get into a question, or you want to get into some you-know-whats?
We can do either one.
To be or not to be. Let's get deep.
To be or not to be? I got to let's get deep. Well, it started as a you-know-what, but we could I don't know. Nah, it should stick to a you-know-what. All right, you pick a let's get deep or to be or not to be.
Well, let's go to you-know-what, because if we end up talking about it, we'll round out the episode.
All right, cool. That. You got one to shoot first, because this one's going to get heavy.
Yeah, I'll get my one.
All right, knock it out.
I have a few, but I'm gonna use the one.
What's that, brother?
I'm tired of being told that I'm scared of coronavirus. People keep saying, "Hey, man, there's nothing to be scared of. Why don't you just go outside? You don't have to be scared." People keep saying that I'm scared, or implying that I'm scared, and I'm just fucking tired of it. There's a difference between fear and caution. Yes. Danger is real.
Absolutely.
Acting in response to said danger is not out of fear, but out of caution. Correct. And that is how I'm reacting. I'm acting out of caution. I'm not afraid of going outside and be like, oh my God, I'm going to get infected. Oh no. And letting that fear inhibit me from living my life. What I'm doing is acting out of caution and acting with precaution to determine how to best navigate the real danger.
That is correct.
That is the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So stop telling me I'm fucking scared, because I'm not fucking scared. And if you're not being cautious, it's because you don't understand what the fuck is happening.
You know, sometimes I wish that people had the understanding my children have, that when they present an argument and I tell them to take another angle, it's not that I can't argue against your angle. It's just that you have no other angle. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If your only description of somebody who is aware is that they're afraid, you got to change radio stations or something. You know, like whatever fucking podcast you're listening to, that algorithm, that echo chamber in which that you live in, like, come on, man. You got to have more reasons to feel the way you feel. And about your analogy for caution versus fear, there is a very big Irish, I guess, I don't want to say like it's a fable, but it's kind of an archetype in The Crow.
Is it from Conor McGregor?
No, it's from way before him.
Okay, got it.
It's hundreds of years old. But The Crow is not afraid of anything, though it approaches cautiously. And so The Crow is an archetype of a wise being in Ireland, of someone who's alert, who's aware, and who knows, like, people eat birds, but you may have something to offer. So crows approach cautiously, yet fearlessly. And that is a real thing. You can be aware and not afraid. Like, I don't like that description of people whatsoever. And anybody who's talking to you like that, tell them to be afraid of me, because I'm coming.
that's all I wanted to get at. But let's get to you.
Mine is, you know what, man? Don't fucking trust me.
All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody.
let me tell you why. I am loyal to a fault. I have very few things to offer the people in my life. One thing is I can make you laugh. I'll do everything I can do to make you laugh. Two is I love revenge. If anybody hurts you, I will fucking hurt them. Like, I'm a pit bull for the ones I love. All you do is let me off the leash and I will get whoever just agitated you. The third thing is,
yes,
I'm unbelievably loyal. I will walk into the worst situation fully aware of what I'm doing just to follow you there. Here's the problem. Most people in my life are not. They don't have that quality of friendship. They might have, I'm not saying they're a lesser person than me. I'm sure they got other qualities that I don't possess or that I barely possess way better than me. Here's the problem.
Sure.
Over time, these people will share with me their deepest, darkest secrets. They will act with me the ways they won't act with their significant others or close relatives, immediate family, or other people who they think are friends. But then one day, they will be themselves and they will cross me and they will fucking hurt me or hurt my family. And here I am with this fucking armory, this arsenal of shit you've shared with me your whole fucking life. And you ended up being you under the belief that you were going to be me, that you were going to have this undying loyalty to me that I have for you. So before you end up in a position where you've just become a shitty person and fucked the one person who has everything on you, just don't trust me. I don't want to know anything about you. I don't want to know your secrets. Send them to someone else. Don't fucking act in a way with me that you wouldn't act with everybody else in the room, because I'm the same person no matter who's in the room. There's nothing you can fucking tell my wife that she doesn't know. There's nothing you can tell my father that he hasn't heard. There's nothing. I'm the exact same fucking dude no matter who's in the room. Now, if you're not, don't give me those heads ups.
Bailey's ratting you out right now, dude. Bailey knows everything.
I don't know if it's a cat or someone's at the door, but he never barks at the door unless there's an animal or a human. It might be whoever the fuck we're talking about. Heard you're podcasting about me.
No, that's all true. That's all true stuff.
You see what I'm saying? Like, because now I'm in a place where I don't, you know, remember my second quality or third quality. I love revenge, second quality. And like, I'm in a place now where I gotta be the good qualities you have about you, like forgiveness and, you know, like taking it on the chin or turning the cheek, whatever the fuck the Bible says. I don't have that quality, or nor do I wish to fucking pursue it. But now I'm sitting on this fucking gold mine of harm I can cause you after you've caused me harm, thinking like, fuck, now I'm in the position to be the bigger person. And
yeah, not if you love revenge as much as
I'm
you
not,
do.
Yeah, I'm not really, you know, I felt like I was the big person all this time. You know, like, and then is there something to say about a burden of knowledge? Like, I know all this grossness about you that I kept secret because I thought we were in love. I thought we had a friendship. Now it turns out we don't have any of that. I don't, now your fucking bad behaviors feel dirty to me. You know?
Yeah.
So just don't fucking trust. You're not me. You're not going to be the undying. And I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about whoever's listening. You're not going to be the fucking undying loyal friend that I am. So like, quit the fucking horseshit. You know what I mean?
That's a fair assessment.
So, 1 hour on the dot.
As always, want to thank you all for joining us here in Pound Town. But before we go, we want to remind you to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to help the show grow. Get in on the conversations by liking our Facebook page and following us on Instagram at Social Nuisance Podcast. And if you really support all that we do, drop a dollar in our Venmo at Social Nuisance, just like the homie Short. Once again, shout out the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And thanks.
We love y'all.
Appreciate everything you guys do.
I was just kidding. And lastly, email me all your secrets.
Don't forget. Lastly, don't forget there's power in numbers, and together we can be a nuisance towards the betterment of humanity. My name's Imagine, and that's the Main Man Motion, and we'll see y'all next week on the Social Nuisance Podcast.
Yay, yay.